The Frankie Files.
Trigger warning. Some people may find topics discussed in this episode difficult. Please proceed with caution.
Cults, coercion, and sexuality in society. These are the topics for the Frankie Files. I'm Frankie Tease, your host, and I'll continue to focus on my own family story as well as news and recovery info for those who've survived, especially the adult children of cults. New each Tuesday. See FrankieFilesPodcast.com for more. Hey everybody, welcome to the final episode of Frankie Files Podcast for Season 2, 2023. I'm Frankie Tease. In this episode, I'll be doing a mega recap of the entire year's worth of episodes in an attempt to highlight the variety of voices and topics, the new material added to the Morningland papers, an ongoing investigation of reporting I've been doing, and to generally entice you to listen to episodes which you may have missed this year. It's been a busy year. Some things to look forward to in this recap include cults, coercion, sexuality as always, and a look at food deprivation, new age beliefs, trafficking, forced labor in cults, author interviews with Stephen Mercer and Brett Harper, Australia journalist Tim Elliott, podcaster and ex-Jehovah Witness Stephen Mather, podcaster Clint Haycock, an ex-evangelist, Christian pastor, religious investigator Lisa Van Arsdale, podcaster and activist Andrew Pledger on Bob Jones University, the new podcast report about abuse of young people, Sara Tasneem, who was a child bride and advocates against it, is back with a report too, Siren Warner on dangerous cults, one in Texas, Rowan Mipagala about One Taste Orgasm Cult, interviews of ex-disciples of Morningland and their stories like Lee O, Gopi X, Stephen Mercer, Steve Ryan, and my mom and I. Cults I report on here also include Children of God, Heaven's Gate, Profundity Yours, 12 Tribes, Jehovah's Witness, Om Shinrikyo, Asahara in Japan, and last not least, my mom, Judy, also known as Frankie's mom. You'll also find a lot of Dr. Lawlish references, who to me is the most knowledgeable cult expert on New Age that I've ever encountered so far. So here's my year-end recap. Thank you to everyone in advance for sharing, liking, rating, and reviewing this podcast. Wherever you listen, such as Substack.com, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, Pandora, iHeartRadio, and the like. More information at FrankieFilesPodcast.com when you have questions. Okay, let's get this wrap-up episode cracking. It is a labor of importance to me and a labor of love to support the freedom of thought I wish for all to have. Here we go. In episode 41, here I'm restating for myself and others why I got into speaking out in the first place, creating materials on the topic of cults, and why I think I have a point of view that needs to be heard. It's about the adult children of cults. Oh, my position and point of view are extremely unique. I've been hearing it all my life, and I'm not young. That's because I was raised in an extremist cult and deprogrammed myself, critically thinking before leaving with a dollar in my pocket. I know what a joke society can be, how the framework can unravel if it's run by totalist thinking. We have to stay astute. During 2022, I learned my views do not fit in well at all with the cult exit counselors, psychologists, adults who went to cults then left, and other cult industry gatekeepers. Well, if you've experienced sexual ritual abuse, you tend not to mince words and sweat the small stuff. I noticed a huge group of adults who went as adults to cults get on great with those in the biz. Yeah, you were all raised in the same world. We literally were not. I'm here to say that. In episode 42, I have guest Ruwanmi Bagala of One Taste Orgasm Cult. You may have seen him on Orgasm Inc., streaming on Netflix. Ruwan was an employee who ended up having financial exploitation in the group and came out in debt, as well as spoke to the FBI when they investigated One Taste's business practices. One Taste was famous for 15-minute orgasm techniques and was funded by Silicon Valley venture capitalists to huge success. Well, yeah, sex sells. But we are hearing from Ruwan about Nicole Dadone, the national USA sex cult, and the good and the bad of it. Listen.
The whole philosophy was around feeling more. Like, if the more you feel, the better your life is, the more you can empathize, the better you can communicate, the better your sex is, obviously. And the whole thing was about feeling more and more. So because of that, people would kind of heighten how much they felt. And then there was an identity that you're pointing to, like the turned on woman or the ignited man was the male counterpart of that, was someone who really felt a lot, and therefore they would behave in certain ways. Like, one like kind of moral switch they used was, you know, someone who's really turned on doesn't feel bad when they get jealous. They still get jealous because everyone was polyamorous, right? Everyone was sleeping with, for the most part, people had multiple lovers, so that caused a lot of jealousy. But a person who like closed off because of jealousy was never stated like this. Like, a person wouldn't be shamed for it, but it would be kind of seen as like, oh, you're not so evolved because you still get upset kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So forced polyamory, really kind of like the pressure, peer pressure.
Wow. Yeah, not forced, but like social pressure for sure.
For episode 43, I have a frequent guest, Siren Warner, a reporter who covers cults and true crime. He broke the story about Profundity Yours out of Marietta, Texas, following breaking the story about the body cult in Alaska, now in Washington. You should listen to the playlist on YouTube, if you can, for Profundity Yours. And that is on my YouTube channel at Frankie Files Podcast. He has a channel there too, Siren Warner. He's a boots-on-the-ground investigative reporter on contemporary cults and true crime. Check cultstories.com for more of his online magazine. Here he is briefly in episode 43's clip.
And it's like, well, the end times are coming. Like, why do you need to go to college when the end of the world is coming? What I'm worried about is she's saying it's the end of the world and, you know, these people have money. She preys on like middle-aged women with money, that it's like a ploy to like, hey, you don't need that money anymore. Like, the end of the world is coming.
Cults and religious extremists use passages from the Bible for abuse to no end. Here I'm happy to have guest Stephen Mather of Cult Hackers podcast talk about Jehovah's Witnesses. He is born and raised in the UK and articulates well the many stages of recovery he's been experiencing. He also holds a BA in group behavior. Check it out.
You mentioned the 144,000, so that there's a specific doctrine around that. So the 144,000 are the faithful witnesses who are going to go to heaven. So for Jehovah's Witnesses, most people are going to live on the earth in paradise and live forever on the earth as humans. So not aging, just staying around the 20s, you know, basically, noodling around on a paradise earth. You know, that is the hope, but there's this 144,000 that obviously, you know, is a number in the Bible, and which is obviously where your ex guys got it from. But here it's these are the leaders that are going to go from the earth and basically be kings and priests in heaven. I never made the dizzy heights of elder. So elder is kind of the leadership in the congregation. So I never became an elder. I was what's called a ministerial servant. Uh-huh. Which is, I guess, the closest thing is like a deacon, I suppose, in some respects. That the person that does all the legwork, really. The ministerial servants do all the boring jobs. But it's only open to men. So unless you are a man, you can't do any of these things. You can't speak at the platform. You can't lead any of the activities. You can't even handle the microphones in the Kingdom Hall because,
as women, we were written out of the Bible pretty quick. In episode 45, world-class investigative journalist at the Sydney Morning Herald, Tim Elliott discusses his podcast about the 12 tribes. Inside the Tribe, Elliott spent years following a couple in Australia who joined and left 12 tribes. Shocking reporting over a decade led him to do a series podcast on this topic, very well produced, and I recommend. See Inside the Tribe, narrated by Tim Elliott. And read his column at the Sydney Morning Herald, too. The pieces are in-depth reporting on society in Australia. Listen to his wrap-up. It's very poignant. You've exposed to us just here today malnutrition, neglect of kids, just all in the name of the dollar to keep 12 tribes going for the end times.
Something we need to continually focus on and make a priority is the teaching critical thinking. So in school and just in society, and make critical thinking and the ability to think for ourselves more of a priority in public discourse. You'll see, even with what has happened with Trumpism or Jair Bolsonaro in Brazil, people are attracted to strong man figures who provide a sense of security and leadership, right? They make complex issues simple. Right. The world's not like that. So we need to teach people from a young age to think critically and examine their beliefs and the beliefs of others and the answers that people are giving them. So they go, well, actually, you know what? I don't think what that leader is telling me is particularly, that doesn't really, it's a very handy, convenient answer to my problems, but really does it really ring true to me? Is it all too easy? I think the same thing goes for cults. You know, if someone's offering you something that sounds too good to be true, or is offers you something, an answer that's very simple to life's complex questions, then think about it a bit more. You know, you need to examine your beliefs and the information you're being given, whether it be by authority or by a religious group. Like anything else, it's like the world's a really complex place, and yeah, you want to belong and you want to have friends and a sense of community, but you don't want to lose your independence or your ability, your critical faculties at the same time. So you always need to be alert to that. Question your own beliefs as well. Are they logical? Do they make sense? Do they stand up to scrutiny? I think that's a really important part too.
Said one of the very few investigative journalists who are left in our time. Thank you, Tim Elliott, for being here today.
No, thank you so much, Frankie. It's been fantastic talking to you.
Morningland is a sex cult. And I'm here to tell you in episode 46 that our special guest, Lisa Van Arsdale, understands. She helps articulate how quite precisely sex cults operate. Using her time embedded with various religious groups, Lisa columns on this topic. You will love hearing the entire episode. Her views are modern and strong. In this clip, she compares Morningland to Mormonism. Check out episode 46 for Lisa's contact info to read her work.
Like, if you really want to mess with a person's well-being, mess with their sexual experiences. Like, there's a reason that people who have experienced sexual trauma are in therapy on and off for their entire life. It's just such like an intimate core part of who you are that it really, really strikes a chord when you f*** with it. As far as the whole like, she belongs to me now, I'm ending your marriage thing. This is yet another example from this group of breaking up secure attachments. And it made me think about how, so Mormon missionaries who I've spent a fair amount of time with hearing about their everyday lives, what they do is they're never allowed to be alone unless they're in the bathroom. So they're always in the car doing volunteer work, even sleeping with in the same room as their partner. And that's so that they'll never be alone with their thoughts or like alone on the phone or anything. There's always someone else they're eavesdropping. But they also change their partners periodically, whether that's every few weeks or every few months. They also will move people around so that you're not partnered with the same person for the entire duration of your mission. And that's so that they're not forming secure attachments. Because if you get comfortable enough with that person, and like in most cults, that's like, you know, a trauma bond opportunity waiting to happen. You're away from home. You've got all of these expectations on you. You're not with anyone else. You could become really, really close to that person. So to then be like, okay, that's it. Now you're going to start from zero with this other person. That will keep you in a level of despair that will make it very difficult for you to leave or to think. Because if you're with the same person that whole time and you have that bond from being in a distressing situation together, you might both start thinking and conspiring about leaving or questioning or being like, you know what, the leader said this and that doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to you? And those conversations might continue. So groups like this really, really rely on breaking up secure attachments.
For many years, I wondered what happened the day Donato died. In 47, the story about Donato dying at the Crestline Lodge, who was there, as told in journal notes from the original xmorninglanders.com website, Gopi X, who asked not to use her name. The Gopi is the highest order in the church. Donato, the male leader of the cult, was surrounded by the priestesses and his wife at the time of his death. Nothing was ever the same after that day for many. Here's the excerpt. Gopi X was present on that fateful day in November of 76 when the original co-founder of Morningland died at the Crestline Lodge. Let's first hear the story and then later my comments.
It came as a bit of surprise to me to learn that many later disciples did not know that Donato was actually a man who physically passed away. Donato died of a heart attack at 5:30 a.m. November 7th, 1976, at Crestline, California. These are the events as I recall them. This was a couples seminar from the Escondido group. And as usual, the discussion teaching period extended well into the night. Donato had made lasagna for the group. He loved to cook. I'd gone to sleep already, but as I later learned, after most folks had gone to bed, Donato stayed up and had some more lasagna. Probably around 4:30 a.m. or so, he came upstairs to the loft and was lying on the mattress, smoking a cigarette and not feeling well, complaining of indigestion. He asked Tanine to go downstairs and get him some Alka-Seltzer or something. He started having the heart attack. He simply said something like, uh-oh, and passed out. Someone woke me, and the image I have in my mind is of Morningstar, and I think Nisanta doing CPR. Tanine went to call 911 and asked them to arrive quietly. Shri was sitting across the room watching. Paramedics came up the back stairs. They got there rather quickly, as I recall. They were very quiet.
Leo takes us through the discipleship he experienced with Donato before his death. In this episode 48 clip, he discovers he had what he finds out later by a cardiologist, a near-death experience at his first Morningland visit in the 70s.
I mean, now fast forward a few decades, and I've been studying this, and what happened to me was, like I said, it was exactly like a near-death experience, pretty much, except for a few differences. If you read up on people who have died on the operating table, it's very similar to that. The difference is they usually meet relatives. They have a life review kind of. There wasn't any of that. It was just me and that being and this download of information. But when I read those experiences for the first time in probably 1980 or 81, I was actually still in Morningland at that point.
Okay.
And I read about them, because the term was invented by a cardiologist named Raymond Moody, who had interviewed people that had these experiences, and so he started to catalog them. And so it's become a thing, but there's an entire body of literature about people that have had what they call, they have a category they have for it outside of the spiritual world is near-death-like experience. But it happens to people who sometimes weren't even anywhere near death. Like sometimes it's just they think they're going to be, like they're about to get in a car wreck and all of a sudden they leave their body and they have this whole experience and then they avoid the wreck somehow. So they never were near death, but this happens anyway. And I was like, well, yeah, that happened to me. Also called a spiritual experience.
You're listening to The Frankie Files, frankiefilespodcast.com. Episode 49, my mom, Judy, and I discussed the recent episode of the Morningland Papers we had just done, three of them, in fact. Regrouping on listening to Leo's episode, we discuss it.
But it is also what Morningland is. It is not new. It is not gone. It is still pumping away and hurting people. I know this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to know the people that are new disciples, etc. I know the people that are old disciples. They haven't changed.
So hearing Lee's perspective really opened up my memory too, just like you, and I'm sure other listeners are going through this that are ex-Morninglanders.
In episode 50, the term gaslighting is discussed, and it is a very popular term, but most people don't truly get what it means. You gotta see the film Gaslight from 1947. I read an article and discuss the 40s film where the term was rooted. Paige Elsweets points out the term was popularized in a 1944 film called Gaslight. That film was adapted from the 30s play called Gaslight. This article explains, quote, the protagonist, husband, secretly dims and brightens the gas-powered indoor lights and insists she is imagining it, making her believe she's insane, end quote. So the term crazy-making was applied to this at some point, a very common thing in politics, legal battles, and such. When you crazy make, deliberately cause someone to doubt their very instincts in life, you discredit them. And when you think about this, it's truly the perfect crime to disable any adversary. It leaves no marks. It leaves no evidence. It lasts forever, disabling the intended subject. Because remember, when this is truly run on someone, it leaves them doubting themselves and their own sanity, unless they know it's coming, and it doesn't work once you know it's coming. How much more intense an attack can there be? Paige Elsweet also states that sociologist Catherine Ferraro says the result is called surreality of abusive relationships, or what scholars and activists Beth E. Ritchie refers to as a hostile social environment. My thoughts? Wow. Now add artificial intelligence to this and you may have a social media hostile environment. For 51, Heaven's Gate was never cute. Sorry, New Age religion. Mixing baby Jesus and spaceships is a long-standing game. I've been mining for gold in this book, Bounded Choice by Dr. Lawlish. Here's a piece of it.
Well, this is why one of this show's focus is New Age religion. I include Scientology in New Age. It's a grifter's paradise. As a child victim of a very similar crazy New Age cult, seeing a sociologist like Dr. Lawlish break down how and why it formed and keeps happening is so rewarding. And it shows me that the public clearly misunderstands New Age cults. A lot of people don't even know. Applewhite thought he was the second coming of Jesus Christ here to finish the job. I notice there's always the massive abuse of using other lives in any New Age cult too, in any psychic realm. It's totally conjecture, and I use to think this, you know, because I was indoctrinated as such. I was conditioned to believe anyone you meet, someone interesting, or there's a certain feeling, oh, I must have known you in a past life. What hooey.
This is Sarah Tasneem from Sarah Tasneem Advocacy, also found on SF Tasneem at Twitter and Sarah Tasneem Advocacy on Facebook. You're listening to the Frankie Files on Sexuality and Society.
Episode 52. I attempt here to pay tribute to someone so damaged in a religious New Age sex cult without promoting violence that ended his life. He made the papers as his pet name, David Ito, but he preferred the name Ricky Rodriguez. Ricky was driven to murder-suicide by sexual abuse from birth by his parents and nanny. Everybody got in on it. There's more. But here's an excerpt. Back to the article. That final Friday night in Tucson, Arizona, January 7th, 2005, the Messiah sat at the kitchen table wearing a maroon muscle shirt, sipping a beer. Sum 41's new album, Chuck, played in the background. It's a dark record, and it set the mood Ricky Rodriguez wanted. As midnight approached, in the one-bedroom dump on the south side of town, he had a good buzz working. Crowded on the table in front of Ricky was everything he needed. A Glock, 40-caliber handgun, several high-capacity 13-round magazines, Golden Saber hollow point bullets, a K-Bar Marine Corps knife, an electric drill, a soldering iron, a 775,000-volt stun gun, a large fork, a thick roll of duct tape, and a couple of gags. Duct tape wrapped around the drill's handle would muffle its mechanical whine. Ricky's dark hair was cut military short. The muscle in his arms bulged as he snapped bullets into magazines. "This is my weapon of choice," Ricky said, picking up the K-Bar knife and looking into the new video camera he'd set up to record the last night of his life. "I only want it for one purpose. That's for taking out the scum. For more efficient cutting," he'd file the K-Bar's blade to a 17th degree. Angry as Ricky was, he also seemed relieved. Finally, he'd get some peace, some revenge, and expose his mother, Karen Zerbe, leader of one of the most secretive and destructive religious cults of the past 40 years. The Children of God, known as the Family International. For decades, the group has operated in the shadows around the world, bombarded with allegations that its members practiced sexual and physical abuse in the name of God and engaged in organized pedophilia and incest. Zerbe played a central, enthusiastic role in the abuse of young members, Ricky chief among them. '53 is about human trafficking. It's in lockstep with cult recruitment. It goes hand in hand. But what if you were tricked into helping track people who never did anything to cause that? What if people who were trafficked are life trafficked? Listen. The power of just one voice is clearer to me than ever. Look at what they're doing to Julian Assange. Journalist Julian Assange leaked to WikiLeaks the reality of a video of the United States procedures in the Iraq War. Many powerful players didn't appreciate that. This journalist has been in solitary now for 4 years. That's how powerful one voice is. They can't just disappear him now. It's too high profile. When people tell the truth, the elite lose money. Quite simply, the underbelly is exposed for them, and then they use all manner of pressure points to make it stop. Seeing how the government has turned on any one voice who aims to disrupt business as usual is easy once you understand the hands-off approach. All agencies are complicit. Once flagged wrongly by your abusers or simply flagged as useful to them, you're coerced in that direction. Example, when I was a stripper and burlesque producer who vowed to never speak of my abuse at the hands of a religious cult in Long Beach, California, I was not bothered. I now believe I was monitored, though. Once I decided I would go public, my life became hard. Hard to find jobs, hard to keep jobs, hard to meet new friends, hard to keep an apartment. Everything was a problem. What changed? I was preparing to tell all. '54, seeing the apocalypticism I endured in an evangelistic New Age style cult I grew up in requires me to take a double take quite often. I mean, this browbeating stuff, they won't really go for that, right? But fatalism and death wish thinking rules our Western culture. Here's my comment on that. The idea of focusing on death all the time is unhealthy. But at what point do we say, hey, do you mind if I think about life and living? That's where I'm at. Choosing music that's not all tragedy, choosing topics of conversation about life, counting on that there is hope for life after whatever this is that's happening in the world right now. It is depressing. People want to get back to normal, but death is a massive fear fueling everything right now. Cult and religious recruitment is on tilt as people read into the end times, doctrines, and the like. It's rampant. Between season one and two, I did a bunch of live Reddit talks, and I was doing those weekly on Sundays. Well, Profundity Yours is a cult in Marietta, Texas, who predicted the world would end. Siren Warner joined me on one of these live Reddit talks and told us about it for the first time. When the world wouldn't end, they raked in more cash and bought up a small town. Siren gives us details in his boots on the ground reports, and they're always appreciated here on the podcast. Listen.
I guess there's new information every day. I communicate with a lot of people down in Texas, and I communicate with a lot of survivors. And there's a really good there's a woman investigating in Texas, and she started doing this like investigation stuff for the first time ever, and she's been like killing it, and like she's been so public about it, and like all these people are just like coming to her, and it's just this incredible citizen journalism that's happening there. And like, I mean, I'm sort of part of that too, because I am working on an article, but you know, most of this story like you'll find on TikTok or YouTube as far as stuff that I've published. But I mean, so much has happened. Like, so I mean, I interviewed a survivor yesterday who told me all kinds of stuff that I had never heard before, and I totally, totally trust her.
In episode 56, ex-preacher Clint Haycock joined me in May to discuss his life before his doctorate in Bible studies forced him to deconstruct in real time while preaching. Quite the story. He now hosts a podcast called The Mindshift Podcast with Dr. Clint Haycock out of UK, where he's an expatriate of USA and quite a critical thinker.
Yeah, I think that's true. But it's sort of a veneer of spirituality. You know, you go in, like, for example, my experience going into a church service, hearing the music and getting caught up in the emotional experience and praying, and in some cases speaking in tongues and things like that. You know, these are like ecstatic experiences. So you walk away from those things and you're on a high, you're on like a mountaintop experience. So you think you've had an experience of God, you've had a move of the spirit, you know, and you feel something. You definitely do. I'm not saying that nothing doesn't happen. It really does. It takes you on an emotional journey. you know, but it was when I started studying Robert J. Lifton, Thought Reform and the Psychology of Totalism. That book completely changed my life because he breaks down how cults actually do, you know, mystical manipulation and milieu control. And it's all part of this package that you enter into that takes you on a journey, but it seems spontaneous, but it's actually all carefully choreographed. And it's he calls it planned spontaneity. And that's really how cults and churches operate. They take you on a journey and you think you've had an experience of the divine, but it's mystical manipulation.
In episode 57, I was joined by a troubled teen industry survivor and two-time author on this topic in May. Brett Harper is out of Oregon, and he has dedicated years to trying to help those affected by the toxic Christian-run unregulated schools he lived through in Missouri and throughout the United States. You got to check out his book. Here is Brett Harper.
They continued doing this. The only way we were able to close them down was just keep exposing them in the media and social media and on Google reviews and on Yelp and on, you know, reaching out to parents directly and on podcasts and reliving all those memories like a million times. We had to do that for like 4 years solid. And we did a great job. Kansas City Star did a great job of covering it. Other people did too. And I think that, I mean, obviously, Brian, Jim's son, who's the survivor, the heir, he was running it. And, you know, he even said that they couldn't get enough boys to make overhead. That's why they closed. So I'm pretty proud of that. The government didn't shut them down. So we did. Like, so if the corruption is bad enough, then you have to hit them in their wallet. And, you know, they've got some civil lawsuits going on, but, like, you can also do it through their credibility.
In researching topics for my show, I never realized I'd be deprogramming myself further in real time. But this is one of those times it happened. In episode 58, I briefly touch on Jung, and the full episode, you may want to hear how previous my master used mandalas to program me neuro-linguistically. Here's some about Jung, mandalas, and psychology. Carl Jung was obsessed with using mandalas in his work with patients. He also used it in introspection and examining his own mind. He would have those waiting to see him draw on a napkin or thin paper that was folded. Then they were to unfold it, and it would create a geometric shape with four symmetrical sides repeating because it had bled through the sheet. He then used it to read the patient's subconscious mind. My master was obsessed with saying she could read people's subconscious and sub-subconscious and help with understanding themselves and their past lives. No, she was actually all about invading our subconscious and controlling each of us. It's a racket, and she studied a lot of psychology to get it done. Let's talk about mandalas and Carl Jung. I went to carl-jung.net. Generally speaking, a mandala is a geometrical form, a square or a circle, abstract and static, or a vivid image formed of objects and or beings. Mandala is a graphical representation of the center, the self. It can appear in dreams and visions, or it can be created spontaneously by drawing. It's present in the cultural and religious representations. Episode 59. Returning sister in activism, Sara Tasneem, is here to update us on child marriage laws, which have shocked me each time she brings us information. Check out her blog at tasneemsfadvocacy.home.blog.
Like, I'll take my state, for example, where I live. I live in California. There's no minimum age to marry here in California. with parental consent and judicial review. And the problem with that is, like, some people will say, wow, like, judicial review is a pretty high bar. And, you know, wow, like, no parent would ever agree or consent to that. Well, unfortunately, when you're talking about children being forced into marriages, it is mostly the adults in their lives who are forcing the marriage. So either their parents or guardians or abusers or a combination thereof. And the judicial review can be as simple as just a rubber stamp that a county clerk can literally just stamp onto a form. And, you know, in some counties like that, it depends on how the county implements the law, but most counties, it's just literally a form. There's definitely cases of children 10 years old, as young as 10 years old, getting married in the United States. So that should be just shocking in and of itself for some of your listeners. And we're not talking about a 10-year-old marrying a 12-year-old. We're talking about a 10-year-old marrying an adult.
The Frankie Files.
In 2022, I had written an article about my centrific cultist history and the odd California connections I had with others. Here's an excerpt of that episode, episode 60. In the 1980s, a guy planted a bomb at the church. He was mad because the church was aggressively bothering his sister who had broken up with a member, trying to recruit her, too. He left a device there and drove away. The rain dampened the device to prevent the dynamite from exploding. I was asleep 100 feet or less right above where it was planted. He hadn't heard an explosion, so he started coming back to plant another one. One of the leaders on premise was asleep in her quarters, Gopi Saravati, and heard an odd click, the detonation failing, and called police. My sister and I were not supposed to be illegally living there, and Mom had been kicked out. The clergy had us go across the street where we watched the scene unfolding from a bay window close enough to the bomb to still die from it if exploded. Of course, we looked through the shades, not to tip off the police that we were still there. Police evacuated a 2-mile radius and the bomb squad came and took the device. The man was apprehended when he was arriving to do it again with another detonator and another set of explosives. Being so young, I didn't think a thing about watching the whole block around me be evacuated, but stupidly still hiding across the street within explosion range. I was scared, and I did what I was told. This memory shows so much about Morningland Cult. They're aggressive in recruiting. They care zero about their devotees and put my sister and my life at real risk that day more than once. I personally at 100% risk of this thing exploding while I slept in the upstairs level of the building, and not because of anything I had done. Later that day, the bomb squad famously took the device to the beach a few miles away and buried it in the sand to explode it safely. It made all the news. The explosion was huge. Check Google for that, circa December 1986, and see for yourself. In 61, sticking with the show theme, this one, Fourth Friday, is about adult children of cults, and I'm begging people to see here by presenting multiple articles that we're extremely life-challenged. And you can cruise through life like I did, ignoring it for some time, and then when it hits you, you're in trouble. Adult children of cults must take special precautions in life to survive due to what we have endured previously, and this is an endless topic. Check it out. Jill Mitten says, second-generation adult survivors of high-demand groups face particular difficulties, not only during their childhood, but also upon leaving the group, because they face assimilation into a culture that is not just alien to them, but also one that they have been taught is wicked and to be hated, end quote. So true. But now we are that group. We are in the world we were supposed to be not of.
It's a mind fluck. Dealing with the stress of world change isn't for everyone, and as I've said before, many do not make it through this transition, literally not knowing who to be. It must be similar to living in a new country that you don't know the language of or societal norms of. You are lost and you have to choose who to be, and some don't really get to that point. Nicole Dodone of One Taste is back in the news, and in episode 62, the wildly ambitious sexual CEO of One Taste, the so-called Orgasm Cult, which was featured in Orgasm Inc. this year on Netflix, was in the news because she got arrested on forced labor after all she got away with. Here's the clip. Founded in 2004, California-based One Taste was the subject of last year's Netflix documentary Orgasm Inc., which followed its rise and the emergence of disturbing allegations from members. The company was initially hailed for its women-centered approach, but after 2018, a report from Bloomberg, in which former members claimed One Taste led them to sexual servitude and five-figure debts, the FBI began an investigation. New York Post, June 13, 2023, alleged Orgasm Cult founder freed on $1 million bond. Judge warns her she's being watched. The woman accused of running a wellness company that doubled as an orgasm cult was sprung on a $1 million bond Tuesday, but a judge warns her that she's being watched while free. Nicole Dodone, founder of One Taste, which promoted orgasmic meditation for women, pleaded not guilty to allegations that she coerced and groomed members into having sex with investors and clients for more than a decade. In episode 63, I used two cults to show behavior of sex cult leaders. The reason I focus on this is because getting and giving sex holds so much sway and power in our lives. These type of cults are very popular and happening in USA. Listen. Dodone had location in several major cities. For recruitment, a member would initially join a meeting and be sold on the concept. Then they would be told they need to take certain classes. The classes were not cheap. There was a whole structure, sort of like Scientology. If you can't afford the classes, you can become an employee and work against the debt by helping book, run classes, or stroke clitorises in group sessions. Employees were encouraged even to have sex with wealthy potential members. Now, this is an anonymous message from someone named T. I am a former member of Morningland. It's not about a booking. I read your article on Morningland Church renamed Totally True as I Remember It. I joined Morningland when it first opened in 74-75 when it was in a single storefront before the whole block was purchased. Also, I was in the group called EWS, Early Warning System. Which became more like Nazi stormtroopers. I was totally fooled by the Morningland leaders and gave all I had, which left me bankrupt emotionally, physically, and financially. I went through all the horrible clearing sessions and saw the members decline from over 1,000 to a few hundred so-called loyal disciples. In 79, I was told to leave Morningland due to some fake charge by Gopi Malikia and her mean boyfriend Mahanta. They saved my life, I'm sure, and it took me years to get back to some sense of normality. I know your mother, and we were in touch during the time she was trying to get you and your sister out of the cult. I was in touch with various anti-cult groups at that time and provided as much input as I could to them about Morningland. I was also interviewed by Long Beach reporters who did a series of articles exposing Morningland for the sham that it was. Thankfully, with the help and support of family and friends, I was able to go on and live a normal life and put that horrible experience behind me. I was so angry for a long time, mostly at myself, for having been so stupid to fall for their deception. Oh, we all go through that. I did learn later on that Dan and Patricia were using drugs,
and having sexual relationships with the gopis and whoever else they could ensnare in their traps. It's shocking and sad at the same time that they continue to operate as a legitimate monastery. They all must be totally insane by now. Anyway, thank you for what you're doing to spread awareness of the cult experience. I see the same dynamics appearing in the political arena now. People who are brainwashed and follow totally evil and destructive leaders. I came to the conclusion that each of us has to be our own leader and stay clear of those who promise rich rewards. I never realized that the Morningland cult had such devious motivations that they did. They looked and acted so spiritual, loving, and kind. But it was just an act, after all. That is an amazing letter. Thank you so much, T. In episode 65, Faith Healing is a Problem. You may want to hear this whole one and be surprised at the amount of prevalence faith healing has through time. It's a bit much, and some say there's a placebo effect. It's not what it's cracked up to be, and I report on that. According to gotquestions.org, divine healing is a supernatural act which resolves a physical, emotional, or spiritual problem. In a Christian context, the supernatural element is God. Many times, though, the agency of the Holy Spirit. Many times through the agency of the Holy Spirit. Islam uses ruqyah, or incantations, to cure diseases by countering black magic and casting out jinn. Tibetan Buddhists include elements of medicine, mantra, and meditation. Pantheism, like New Age philosophy or cosmic humanism, use a wide variety of techniques from ancient religions and the occult, i.e. astrology, witchcraft, Wicca, the black arts, fortune telling, magic, black and white, Ouija boards, tarot cards, spiritism, parapsychology, and Satanism. They state that the constant among these views of divine healing is the necessity of ritual. Healing in the non-Christian religious view requires a physical ritual to coerce a deity into action or to manipulate an impersonal healing force. We get back to the Morningland Papers in episode 66, continuing to report on the cult in its 50th year in Long Beach, California. Mom, original member Lee O, and I chat about the article that came out in April this year, 2023. The article was by Signal Tribune, and the irony is that this was online and in print, distributed widely the week of the Grand Prix in 2023, April, when the town is quite full of visitors. We thank Kristen Naim for investigating on our stories here. She wants more people to contact her at Signal Tribune. For your information, check this out.
So you went to a Parents Without Partners event, but then you were greeted there by the gopis. Yeah, so it's making me wonder, what the heck were they doing there?
Organizations like that have visitation solicitors that present like insurance or dental help or psychic readings. They do.
Right.
They are approached.
Right. Right.
They are approached by a variety of people selling things and do have 10 or 15 minutes to entertain, so to speak.
They snuck in there, huh?
Yes.
Did you ever go back to Parents Without Partners?
No.
See? In episode 67, the Morningland Papers is continued when I read a statement from Steve Ryan, who wrote about his Morningland experience. It's a sex cult. Yep.
She made it clear I could not be sitting on the fence in this matter for long without dire spiritual consequences. I later learned this term meant no bisexuality. You're either straight or gay. trans people were not accepted as they were in denial of the body the Holy Father had assigned to them. And bisexuals were fence-sitting and needed to make a choice and stick to it. So much for We Are All One.
This is Ciaran Warner. You may know me as the Cult Hunter. And you are listening to Frankie Files. The cults are out there.
Episode 68. Your brain on music is a cult leader's dream. Using music from Om Shinrikyo, the book This Is Your Brain on Music, which has given me endless knowledge about the way we hear and perceive our environment and how music can act as a hypnotizing agent to the brain, making us easy to indoctrinate, I get into Our Brain on Music. Similarly, you can see how it is that all songs we have ever heard and all those that will ever be created could be made up of just 12 musical notes, ignoring octaves. Each note can go to another note or to itself or to a rest, and this yields 12 possibilities. But each of those possibilities yields 12 more. When you factor in rhythm, each note can take on one of many different note lengths. The number of possibilities grows very, very rapidly. Much of the brain's computational power comes from this enormous possibility for interconnection. And much of it comes from the fact that brains are parallel processing machines rather than serial processors. Episode 69, going further with the David Levitin book, This Is Your Brain on Music, I cover how we as adult children of cults can avoid music influence, negative influence of music, and also use music as a drug to affect our mood positively and affect our motivation. So, cult kids, use sound to reprogram yourself. Use sound to reset, to elevate the mood of you and others. Use it in headsets to help get through your day. Avoid lyrics with apocalyptic death messages, messages of fear and paranoia. That's not it. Get a message that will elevate your critical thinking. Warm your heart to nature here on our planet and find out what tones are beneficial by researching Hertz, H-E-R-Z. The best thing we can do for ourselves as cult kids is understanding how the cult leader tricked our brains into working against us and flip the script, getting our brains to serve our new agendas, freedom of thought, freedom from religion. Shake that shiver man loose, as Fat Freddy's drop lyrics say to do. For episode 70, this fifth Tuesday interview, I speak with author Stephen Mercer. He's a well-balanced individual out of California and a family man. His encounter with Morningland spawned the only memoir about the place in existence, and it was in the year 1997. But it came out in 2022. Check it out on Amazon and listen to this clip. Stephen Mercer's book is on Amazon now, and Stephen is spelled with a PH. You gotta read his book, because it's so riveting.
The ceremony, now she went around the room and performed various techniques with the attendees, which occasionally included touching them. And whenever she touched me, I felt something like an electrical current passing through me. In fact, I'm actually reading from my book right now. At one point, she came up behind me and touched the back of my neck. I experienced it as a warm, fuzzy kind of current. When I met her in person, she took my hands in hers, and I felt the same thing. It was very distinct. I'd never felt anything like that before. I also felt compelled to accept whatever it was she was saying at the time, almost as though she had hypnotic powers. And I could tell that something was being done to me, but at the time, I didn't understand exactly what. All I knew for certain was that she had extraordinary powers. You know, this was someone unlike anyone I'd ever encountered before.
In In episode 71, if you can believe it, my mom had saved a cassette tape she had from 1987, and we air it. One day on my birthday, she came to the temple called Morningland Church and sat in her car at the curb, hoping to see and speak to her daughters on their birthday. The church had us shun our mother, and we were inside not notified of her presence. And this was the third year of it. What she captured was the unabashed menacing and verbal abuse by clergy and other members as a mother tried to see her twins. I wonder how it felt for them to hear our episode and their awful voices on this cassette tape, which I had to digitally restore.
Hi, this is Frankie's mom, and you're listening to the Morningland Papers on Frankie Files Podcast. At this point, I am thinking that these people are done. They've gone away from my car door, and they've said what they wanted to say. I was wrong.
In episode 72, in this long overdue interview, I finally have grown enough emotionally and have enough talks with my mom that I could interview her about her experience and perspective of our family separation in Morningland. Mom had it rough. I know that now.
So there I was, finally relaxing, and the lights were low, the candles were lit. There was a wall with a Jesus picture on it and Donato's picture on it. And the music started playing, and all of a sudden, I was on top of my head viewing the room from way up on top of my head, not in my body, not through my physical eyes. I was seeing another space, mm-hmm. another time. Well, actually, it was right then. It wasn't another time. It was where the people had been sitting. Maybe there was 15 people in that room at the time, sitting in fold-up chairs. Mm-hmm. Now there were just egg-shaped lights that were huge, like from your chest to your rear end, in an egg shape, but it's all electrical. And there I could not see the body. It was just the egg shape, electrical, lit up, bright. Everybody in there was just electrical. And I was totally out of pain, no body pain, no fear, no... It was just a wonderful experience. And then as the music stopped, I went right back into my body. Once again, I felt the gravity, and I opened my eyes, and everybody was back like it was just that very night. I said, okay, I became a disciple of Donato. I don't think I ate or drank anything prior to the service beginning, because I came just exactly at the time, sat down, and participated.
Last year, I met Andrew Pledger, and he was on the podcast in season one. Check that out. Now he's back to discuss in episode 73 his limited series podcast, which investigates Bob Jones University. It's a Christian university in South Carolina, but has locations around the world, and it stemmed from the Independent Fundamental Baptist system that still has trouble with people of color or LGBTQ plus folks. It's 2023, and he's been incredibly savvy in putting this report together with multiple guests and experts.
In science, you're supposed to prove your theory wrong. You're doing everything to prove it wrong, not right. Like, this is the exact opposite of science. If you have something you think is true and you're doing everything you can to twist reality and make it work. Like, okay, so light years is a big issue.
Okay.
With fundamentalists, because if the world is 6 to 10,000 years old, why are we seeing light that is just like, I don't know, billions, trillion, you know, so much higher than that, light years away? How do you explain that?
How did they?
So they would do mental gymnastics in class. I remember sitting in a class period and I just wanted to walk out. I'm like, y'all are doing like the hardest mental gymnastics I've ever seen. And like, this teacher had a graph of explaining how these light years could have worked. And one argument they use a lot too is that, oh, God made the world like it was old.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like he already made the light already reaching that far. Like he made the light reach it immediately. Like it already.
So I see. So it's presented through this filter. Like rose-colored glasses, only it's like BJU glasses. In 74, New Age beliefs are so prominent in our society in the U.S. that you can see meditation symbols on food products. The infiltration is complete. But do we know what all the jargon and words are based in? It's a lot of hooey. Check this synopsis out. The I Am movement was founded in the 30s by Guy Ballard, a mining engineer, and his wife Edna Ballard. The group I Am is based on the Bible, when God replies to Moses, quote, I am who I am. Ballard claimed he had a vision at Mount Shasta in California of the ascended masters of the Great White Brotherhood. Believing, like many, including Theosophy, that this order of spiritual beings guides the overall destiny of humankind and speaks through human messengers. Blavatsky claimed the first contact with the masters in the 1800s. What is a sex cult? In episode 75, I take another pass at defining it and how it differs from other types of cults. It's a powerful type of control one has to experience to believe. And cult leaders wield it like a lightsaber over their devotees. I was initiated into the Daughters of Isis. The path for me led to being in a sex ring as a teen with multiple other adults, mostly women. The humiliation of the sex abuse ritual cannot be stressed here. From the first sex abuse ritual I was coerced into with my sister, I was never the same. Not in sex, which was my first experience, but also not in life. I was tricked and controlled, and something like that changes you. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services claims coercion can make you think you owe sex to someone. It might be from someone who has power over you, like a teacher, landlord, or boss. But no person is ever required to have sex with someone else. Well, that's the kind of stuff you never hear in a sex cult. For episode 76, why is food deprivation just as powerful as sleep deprivation when attempting to control human beings? I use multiple articles on the topic to shed a light. They say brain fog, depriving your body of food, can also disrupt blood sugar. In a study published on metabolism in 2007, normal weight, healthy adults either consumed one meal or three meals per day over 2 8-week periods.
Researchers found that eating one meal per day caused blood sugar imbalances, including elevated morning blood sugar levels, while eating three meals per day did not. Blood sugar imbalances can cause a host of bothersome effects, including mood swings, headaches, trembling, sweating, and fatigue. Thinking well requires eating well, and not just once in a while. So, a comment there. Cults never want us to think straight. I think I get it. In episode 77, after international connection issues, I'm happy to bring him to the Morning Land Papers part of the Frankie Files. Yes! Steve understands a lot of what I went through and others who experienced sexual disorientation in Morning Land. What the flock? And Steve has helped many of us by allowing me to read his story in episode 67 as well. Thank you, Steve. Listen.
Well, I think all the gopis were in on that game except for Guillaume. I don't think Guillaume knew. They had a way of breaking people little by little. It was pretty good.
And in Escondido, Gopi Sarabhati was definitely trained by Sri Patricia how to do sports sex, to rope people in.
And she was underage, too, which was, like, really sketchy. Quota was only, Penny was only, like, maybe 18, 19.
And the doctrine was all over the place. I wrote down some stuff that I remember. Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, mm-hmm. the Upanishads, mm-hmm. Carlos mm-hmm. Castaneda, Be Here Now,
Gandhi.
Oh, so much mm-hmm. about Gandhi, right?
Yeah, Yogananda.
Yogananda, Buddhism, yeah. Shamanism.
Ram Dass.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. All over the map.
And then the Book of Thoth, Aleister Crowley.
And then Urantia.
The Book of Urantia. That's right. Oh my gosh, that was used all the time.
Yeah, that was a huge book, right?
Nietzsche.
But that's basically the whole philosophy of Morning Land.
You're listening to The Frankie Files, frankiefilespodcast.com. It has just been a wild and blustery year doing this content and bringing things to light about Morning Land, which have been in the shadows too long. A note in leaving you this year, when people like me decide to speak up about our past, we've had years of thinking to do it. We do not do this lightly. A person like me has to believe that they have no other recourse but to tell the story to prevent its repeat on others. Sure, it's impossible to think, I can stop all cults. But to expose the one you came from is every survivor's wish. Just because I know the exact type of abuse one might endure in Morning Land. So I would not want anyone ever to have that happen. People who joined me on the podcast all feel the same way. We're raising our voices and it's not always comfortable to do so. It can have an emotional hangover for days and weeks, sometimes months. We're raising our voices because we see the same thinking that happened in the cult, the same groupthink, the same brain-dead reasoning or lack thereof that puts kids in harm's way. We see it out here in everyday life. And this is the type of harm that a child may never recover from. The type of harm that leaves no visible bruises or abrasions. The type of pain that lasts a lifetime and the type of wounds that are reopened each time you attempt to make peace with family members whose relationship the cult systematically destroyed. This year I can name two people who were abused as children in cults who took their lives. One is from La Luz del Mundo, and one is from Children of God. And that's just the two that I know about. Both are religious sex cults who believe that God and Jesus condone their actions. They do it in the name of religion or love. None of that is believable to this cult kid. May they rest in peace. Thanks for listening to Frankie Files Podcast. It's been quite a year. And always keep critical thinking.
The Morning Land Papers. The year is 1973. An Italian couple begins a metaphysical church using a storefront in Long Beach. It's in California at 7th Street and Ohio. Healings, readings, spaceships, and oneness were offered amidst mysticism cloaked in gold, purple, and New Age lingo like tarot, astrology, and numerology. The man claimed he was Christ. The woman helped promote the idea. Today they own the city block. Both founders are deceased, and trained leaders carry on the destructive cult. As an ex-member, I'm here to get the story straight. Finally, Morningland, 50 years a cult. Partakes of a cult kid. Check out frankietees.substack.com for more information. Partakes of a cult kid. Check out frankietees.substack.com for more information.